Welcome back to another sci-fi episode where psychology and finances collide. We will be examining how we think, feel, and behave with money, especially more focused on the thinking part today, as we'll be covering cognitive behavioral therapy and how I can help you understand what cognitive distortions you might be engaging in that are keeping you from actually achieving your financial goals and maintaining your financial goals. And I have a guest speaker that has returned, Ms. Carolyn White. She's our Employee Assistance Program Manager, and we're happy to have her here again. Ms. Carolyn, if you would like to just say hello to the audience.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me back, Olivia. It's always a great time getting to talk to you and, you know, be a part of what you're doing here, and also just being able to share some really vital information about mental health and how our thoughts heavily influence, you know, what we do and how we react.
That's right. And with mental health awareness coming up, I wanted to make sure that we got some good, solid mental health topics. Now, everyone that listens to this podcast knows that I do rely heavily on psychological principles, but today we're going to be following the gold standard of treatment, one of the most researched and evidence-based practices for depression and anxiety and many other disorders as well. And not to say that financial mismanagement is a disorder, but what we're going to be focused on is how the principles of cognitive behavioral therapy will benefit the listener in achieving those financial goals that they're seeking. I do want to give a shout out. I attended a continuing education class provided by the Institute for Brain Potential, and I want to make sure that I give street cred to Dr. Jonah Paquette, who taught this class, and I wanted to make sure that he knew I was not plagiarizing his work, but wanted to give him a shout out. And of course, I added a lot of different terminology as it pertains to finances, but very well done continuing education class. And I really like the title because it caught my eye in that, wow, I can get continuing education class or units for my license, but I can also apply it to working with financial clients. It was entitled Applying Cognitive Behavioral Techniques to Create Sustainable Change.
And I think that's what most people are looking for.
Exactly. That's all they want. Mm-hmm. I love the metaphor that he gave where he talked about people going to the gym. And if you don't work out regularly, you finally go. You go to the gym, you work out for an hour, your muscles are sore, you know that it was effective, but then you don't return. Mm-hmm. And then there's no long-term benefit. But with cognitive behavioral therapy, as long as you're practicing this on even an every other day type of time frame, you'll exercise that thinking muscle a little bit more so that you're always aware of how you're thinking. And here's the reason why Caroline and I are going to be talking about this is, number one, not all negative thoughts are distorted.
Absolutely.
Not all negative thoughts need to be challenged or reviewed. If we have a negative interaction in traffic, it's done, it's over. Unless you're saying you're a failure and it's just your luck that this happened to you, then maybe you want to start challenging those. But when it comes to financial management, what I hear a lot of clients say is, Olivia, this is all well and good, and this is going to be great information for me to take, but I know myself. I'll do this for a week, like going to the gym for an hour and feeling sore. I'll go for a week, feel good, see the rewards, the short-term gains, and then I'll stop. So the three core principles of cognitive behavioral therapy are, one, how we think influences how we feel.
Absolutely.
Kind of, yes, like how Viktor Frankl had stated, the space between the stimulus and the response is that space to choose. Mm-hmm. And that's your freedom to think. and what you would like to do, or even your attitude about something, how you would like to think about the situation, which will impact how you feel about a situation and therefore will impact what you do about a situation. Our thoughts are often distorted, particularly in times of suffering.
Absolutely.
And Carolyn, I know when you have someone coming to see you, everything is foggy.
Yeah, it either feels like it's difficult to see, it's being diminished, or on the other end, that everything feels overwhelmingly huge.
Yes.
Insurmountable. Like there's no way to tackle it or even really know where to start. And a lot of it has to do with what you're describing, with how our brain is able to perceive things when you feel bad.
Exactly. And when you're suffering, and it could even be perceived suffering, where you're living from paycheck to paycheck. And there is some suffering in there because maybe you are wanting to save for that down payment on the home, but every time you try, there's another emergency that arises and you have to pay for that, and that took away from your savings. So it does create this sense of suffering. But what cognitive behavioral therapy does, and I'm not suggesting that just because you don't own a home or just because you live from paycheck to paycheck that you need therapy. That's
right.
Not what I'm saying here. But these principles have been around before formalized therapeutic practice was in place. So before there were psychotherapists,
right.
There were some Greek philosophers who would challenge cognitions, and of course even biblical principles. One of my favorites is Paul's writings on challenging every thought or holding every thought captive. And if you want to renew your mind, then you have to transform your thinking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so there's so many things, and so that's why I'm bringing in cognitive behavioral techniques, and I'll try to stop saying therapy, cognitive behavioral techniques that can help us get to where we want to be financially. So the other principle is when we change how we think, we change how we feel. And it's really about looking at ourselves and others in a more flexible way, and that's how we improve our financial well-being and our functioning. So Carolyn, before we dive in to how this is all structured to give people a visual, I know that you've sent me several clients that have come to see you for financial issues, and then rightfully so, you refer them to me. But tell me, what's the frame of mind usually when you see someone in financial distress?
I mean, really, it's a time of crisis.
Yeah.
And it's often because they're dealing with their own financial situations, where maybe they're looking at bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they are going through a divorce. Sometimes it's a situation where they've had multiple health issues and family situations, and it just feels like one major crisis after another has turned into this ballooning crisis for them. And then on top of that, their job is now in jeopardy.
That's right. Their security clearance is at stake.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so there's this extra layer of fear, where I'm now dealing with all these things that I've been trying to get ahead of, and now how am I going to manage that? Because the one thing that I had, the one piece of stability, the one way to maybe pay off some of these situations, is now at risk.
And fear can be a wonderful motivator, but when you're in that state of crisis and fear is the only motivator, then it is more foggy.
Absolutely. And it really speaks to that suffering.
Yes.
You know, that fear over a long period of time. You know, many people struggle with chronic stress. Chronic stress is motivated by the same biological process in our brains. And so it gets to the point where it just feels like prolonged suffering.
Exactly. So we're stuck in our amygdalae, which researchers have discovered there are two, one in each hemisphere, which I thought was amazing research recently. And so we have to move from the fear center of our brain to the neocortex, to where our beautiful gray matter that separates us from the lower animals is there for our benefit to make decisions about money, to make decisions of our living conditions, and those things that our prefrontal cortex help us with. So I want to kind of give you a visual as you're driving or as you're just sitting at lunch listening or however you're listening to this podcast. Just take a moment to visualize this for a second. This is what we call a cognitive constellation, where if you're thinking about the stars and, you know, the constellations there and how they all connect, this is how negative financial beliefs are maintained. It usually starts with a child, tween, or teen experience. So it's an early experience surrounded by a money talk. Mm-hmm. So in my home, and I've given my own appropriate self-disclosure several times, and why should I stop? Money was a source of fighting in my home. And so my early experience was money leads to arguments, there's never enough, and only important people have money. I know. What a core belief, right?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one on our next walk. And then, so you have this early experience, and then it goes to these dysfunctional assumptions where you start to formulate in your cognitive constellation, unless these go unchallenged, I am not important unless I have money. Mm-hmm. That stuck with me from childhood all the way through high school.
Yeah, because it starts to influence how you see yourself.
Exactly.
How you see others and how you see the world.
Right. Your core belief impacts your own worldview. And it becomes very dangerous because it keeps you from making positive connections with other people that may have been a great connection for you. And I'm about to get into that. So then a critical incident occurs. And I call those significant emotional events. My father was medically separated from the Army. But you have to understand, audience, that the Army is what got us out of poverty in the first place. So when my dad was medically separated, and that was back in the 90s where you didn't have a med board. You didn't have all these things to prepare you and get your
and protect
rating.
You.
Right. Yeah. And you didn't get your rating quickly. I mean, it took years and years and years for my dad to get a rating. So we were medically separated, and we went from living on base in a nice home to living in a trailer with holes in the floor. Now, I want to say there's nothing wrong with living in a trailer. There are very nice trailers and modular homes that are wonderful places. But for us, it was it should have been condemned. It was one of those situations. So here was the other significant event that occurred in tandem with that. I was in high school, and there were these lovely girls in my art class that were preppy girls on the tennis team. They had a car. And I thought, man, it would be so nice to have a car. Mm-hmm. It'd be great not to get picked up by my mom in a clunker. And it would be nice to join the tennis team. It would be nice to have extracurriculars if only I had a car. If only I had money. And my personal view of money and my personal assumption, because it went unchallenged, kept me from having a relationship with these two girls that were so nice to me, showed so much compassion towards me, invited me out places, but I did not feel worthy enough to be with them. So then you have now the activation of the assumption. So now it becomes your reality. This is where it gets really scary. So I started telling myself only the offspring of important people have luxuries and don't have to work. Yeah, and how unfair to these lovely girls that were always kind and compassionate, and we had a great time in art class, and then it led to the behavior of a depressed state.
Right. Well, and how unfair to you.
Exactly. That and thank you for saying that.
Yeah, that your relationships are going to be impacted because of your reality.
Right.
That has resulted from what started off as an assumption, that started off as a belief, that started off as an early childhood experience.
And if challenged at that moment in time, had I gone to my mom and said, hey, mom, this is what's going on in my head. And like teenagers really do that, right? Because a lot of times they think they're off or awkward or weird for having those thoughts. And so they don't want anyone knowing they even have those thoughts. So this cognitive constellation that I built led to a state of depression where I thought, oh, well, all hope is lost. I might as well just do nothing because I am going to be an unimportant person that will never have money.
And that's where I see a lot of people when they've given up.
Yeah.
And now it's gotten to the point that the rest of their life is starting to be significantly impacted and other people are starting to say, hey, you've got to do something.
Right. And here comes, enters the room, my junior high school teacher, who is just like a Carolyn White, and who senses something is off and starts to challenge my belief system, those dysfunctional assumptions, by saying, hold on a second, Olivia, you're in AP English. How do you think you're not worthy to go to college?
Right.
I mean, college is mostly writing. You'll do well. So she couldn't understand. Yeah.
But it makes sense. That fear of how am I going to pay for this? How am I worthy enough to be able to sit in the same room as these other people who can afford the things that I can't?
That's right. And then from there, well, that sounds all great and good, but how am I going to afford it?
Right.
And thankfully, my dad took me to our community college guidance counselor, and I was able to apply for Pell Grant and use that until my dad got his rating. So anyway, it was one of those cognitive constellations, if you think of a spider web, where everything in there just I kept weaving in and out, and in order for this connection to occur, I had to change my reality to make the next connection, to make it fit my belief system. And that's the same thing that happens, at least with what I see with my clients that come in for financial counseling, is those that are living paycheck to paycheck have this warped view of self. They have some core beliefs that have gone unchallenged, and we're about to get into those cognitive distortions. And then we get into a state of depression or anxiety. So here's what financial stagnation is: a state of depression, right? So when it comes to cognitive behavioral techniques, we're thinking you're not filing your tax returns, you're not paying your bills, you're telling yourself what's the point, it's hopeless now, so it will be hopeless in the future. You're putting expectations in the wrong thing, expecting that more money is going to fix the problem, when more money is actually just going to create more debt.
Right.
Unless these thoughts go challenged or are challenged. So I know you've heard of the negative triad before, and this is, again, I love these. You're going to think of yourself in this triangle where you have three things that are on each side of you: the self, the world, and the future. And usually in a state of depression, especially as it revolves around a financial depression where you're feeling helpless and hopeless, for the self, you say things like, I'm always broke. Which may not be true, right?
Right.
We have a lot of high-income earners here at Redstone Arsenal. Are they broke, Carolyn?
Just in their head.
Only in their heads. Exactly. I love that you said that. Then you have the world, which is the second point of that negative triad. So then I must believe that other people don't care about me.
Right.
My boss didn't give me that promotion. It's her fault. It's his fault. And then there's other blame that goes with that. And you have the third point of that negative triad, which is the future. The future is now bleak and it is hopeless.
Right.
And Carolyn, I know we see a lot of folks who are in a depressive episode or state of depression, or even if they're not meeting the criteria for depression, they have the symptoms to support mood adjustment disorder or something of that nature. And then they start having these common negative automatic thoughts. And here's what an automatic thought is. And I know you know this, Carolyn. I'm looking at you like I'm schooling you. But it's as it sounds. When something happens, I automatically think the same thing over and over and over again. Oh, here comes the tennis player down the hall with a new outfit. Mm-hmm. She's important. She gets new clothes.
Yep.
Here comes the second tennis player coming down. She has her nails done. I've never been to a spa. I don't know what that's like because it's only for important people. Again, that negative triad that continues if it goes unchallenged. And so the automatic thoughts that I would have are, I'll never have money. Mm-hmm. I'll never be important. I'll never be financially successful.
Absolutely. It becomes a soundtrack. It becomes,
yes,
you know, this looping soundtrack in your head.
We're playing the same old tapes,
mm-hmm,
over and over again. When we do have the power to press pause.
Absolutely.
But more importantly, we have the power to press record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can stop it at any time,
mm-hmm,
and record something new. Just like, yeah.
Exactly. So just like that junior AP English teacher walked in and said, I don't understand where this is coming from, and challenged. And that was like the what do you call it? The chink in the armor,
mm-hmm,
that was finally discovered. Oh my goodness, there is hope. So now we've talked about depression and what a financial depressive episode might look like. And that includes financial stagnation, not, mm-hmm, paying your bills, not paying your taxes, just giving up hope.
Right.
What a financial panic attack, mm-hmm, might look like, or overarching anxiety might look like, it's the opposite of depression and stagnation, where there's constant striving.
Right.
And it's fear-based,
yep,
as we just talked about, and you're making financial decisions based on fear.
Mm-hmm.
And if fear is your only motivator, you're not making the best decisions.
No, you're not using the rational part of your brain. You're using purely emotional instinct and memories that, as you discussed, aren't necessarily reliable.
Right, and that's animal brain.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not engaging the gray matter that we've been blessed with, which,
right,
our neocortex, our prefrontal lobes that help us make decisions, help us focus and actually see what needs to happen or change. So we all know that the hallmark of anxiety is avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
So some might say, well, I thought I was depressed because I'm avoiding paying my taxes.
Right.
There's a difference between a depressive financial episode and an anxious financial episode. In a depression, you're just thinking, well, all hope is lost. I'm helpless. I can do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But in a state of anxiety, you're just avoiding the situation altogether because you're fearful of the outcome.
Absolutely. And another thing to consider also is how those two work together.
Oh, yeah. They do, don't they? Tell us about that.
And so you might start off in a depressed state, and because I'm not paying my taxes, that can then trigger a state of fear, which then can trigger anxiety, and then the worry and avoidance can then trigger a depression. And so,
yeah,
you can actually cycle between the two, mm-hmm, and just continue to exacerbate the situation.
Right. And the amount of energy that is exerted,
it's exhausting.
When you are anxious about money,
mm-hmm,
it is exhausting, which can lead to a depressive financial episode.
Absolutely. Because you're exhausted and you give up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's a great way to put that. It's a great visual. So now for anxiety, here's what the negative triad looks like. For self, I'm frightened to look at my budget.
Mm-hmm.
I'm avoiding it altogether. I have mental accounting, but we all know that mental accounting does nothing for us. It's not steeped in reality. Try it one time. Go a month on only mental accounting. Well, I really should not encourage you to do that because you might find yourself in a pickle. Not might, you will. The other point is others in that negative triad. Oh my goodness, a financial counselor will humiliate me.
Mm-hmm.
If I go in to talk to Olivia, it's just going to be a humiliating experience. It's going to be shameful. And I will have to approach,
mm-hmm,
the numbers,
yeah,
rather than avoid them. And here's the future point, that last third point in the negative triad. It's my luck. I'll do well for a couple months, then screw it up again.
Yeah.
So you're already setting your future up for failure, sabotaging yourself once again because of the following autonomic thoughts or automatic thoughts. I'll just mess everything up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm an engineer. I make a lot of money, but people know I'm really a fraud. People really think those things.
Every day.
Yes. And so it just shows how anxious you can be. So we've met our time limit for part one of this series of covering cognitive distortions and using cognitive behavioral techniques to create sustainable change in our finances. I don't want to leave you in a state of flux where you're thinking, okay, Olivia, now I'm really beating myself up. I would encourage you, until this next episode, part two, comes out, I would encourage you to go back and look through the different seasons within the podcast and find one that interests you, and I guarantee you you'll find something motivational in that podcast that will give you some pointers. Anything else, Carolyn?
Yeah, this is something I do with my clients every day. I'm going to encourage you to start building awareness. All of this stems from awareness. So, Olivia, you've already given them great cues to start looking at maybe what some early childhood experiences are that they've gone through that have started creating some core beliefs and then assumptions that have gone unchecked through your through their lives. And so creating some awareness and starting to understand what that process looked like for them. And I think that's going to set them up beautifully for when they come back for your next podcast to be able to start applying the things that you're talking about.
Oh, good. So the good therapist is giving you homework. And I love that.
I try not to call it homework. I prefer practice.
And I prefer experiment.
There you go.
So we're going to practice and experiment with going back and listening to the first portion of this podcast when I start talking about the cognitive constellation.
Yeah.
And again, just to remind you what that looks like, what were your early experiences? What dysfunctional assumptions started to form from those early experiences? What were the significant emotional events or critical incidents in your life that started leading to the activation of that assumption, where that assumption now becomes part of your everyday living and experience and reality? And then what were those negative automatic thoughts that started rearing their ugly heads? And what did it lead to? Maybe for you it didn't lead to depression. Maybe it did lead to some level of anxiety. Or maybe it led to a breakup. Or maybe it led to something else that was undesirable, but ultimately a behavior that we now know through this series on cognitive behavioral techniques, we can change by challenging our thinking and doing something different. So we'll see you next time after your practice and experience.